For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe, as you should also support our work if, in both cases, you don't already. Also, many thanks to the people who do support our work and help make CDN possible. And greetings to viewers in Portugal, another place I've almost visited, which means I've spent a couple of hours in Lisbon Airport, but I've never set foot outside it. They have made it number 20 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction, and I do hope one day to visit. This week's newsletter led off with Bjorn Lomborg's refusal in the Financial Post, the Wall Street Journal, and the South Pacific to eulogize the Great Barrier Reef. Not because he doesn't like it, but because he doesn't believe rumors of its demise. As you know if you read our blog and watch our videos, the funeral has been very crowded lately, with gloating mourners from activist outfits and media outlets, but we repeat ourselves, rushing up to the coffin clutching tipping points such as, quote, world's coral reefs in almost irreversible die-off, scientists say, end quote, only to find that, disappointingly, there's no corpse at all. As Lomborg writes, quote, the latest data show that coral cover has dropped across 10 of 11 sectors, with two experiencing their largest one-year drop, end quote. But, he then notes, quote, large year-to-year variations are typical. This year's declines came off the record highs of 2024. One sector is at its highest ever coral cover, and cover across the entire reef is only the fourth highest ever recorded since systematic monitoring began, end quote. So, cancel the funeral again. Speaking of which, after all the experts and all the models predicted above-average hurricane activity, as of late October, we saw just four hurricanes of any sort and three majors in the North Atlantic. Then came Hurricane Melissa, which, quote, could be the strongest to hit Jamaica since records began in 1851, end quote, unless it isn't. So yes, weather is unpredictable. Having been disappointed by the quiet North Atlantic hurricane season this year, The Guardian embraced Melissa with glee, quoting a, quote, professor in climate risks and resilience at the University of Reading, end quote, so yes, that's apparently now an academic discipline, that, quote, communities in Jamaica will need to prepare for potentially unimaginable impacts, and with climate change fueling stronger storms with higher rainfall totals, this is a stark example for other countries as to what may be in store for them, end quote. So phew, death and destruction. NBC emailed, quote, breaking, Hurricane Melissa makes historic landfall in Jamaica as Category 5 storm, end quote. Historic, no less. Or not, since the related story said, quote, Melissa is now one of the strongest Atlantic hurricanes on record and the strongest to ever hit Jamaica. It is ranked first in terms of the strongest landfall with winds of 185 miles per hour, tied with the Labor Day hurricane of 1935 and Hurricane Dorian in 2019. Melissa has the second highest wind speed recorded for an Atlantic hurricane, with 185 miles per hour, tied with four other hurricanes, end quote. So, it is a strong storm, but not unprecedented. There were stronger ones last century. As for further back, of course it's not, quote, the strongest to ever hit Jamaica, end quote. I mean, we have no idea what hit Jamaica before 1492, but to take just one example of what really happened there within recorded history, quote, August 28th, 1722, the eye of an intense hurricane crossed Port Royal, bringing a 4.9 meter, 16 foot storm surge and causing extensive damage throughout the island. Half of the port's buildings were destroyed, with those built during British rule suffering worse than those built under Spanish rule. Roughly 400 people were killed, and only four crew among the 50 ships moored at Port Royal survived. Surviving colonists were stricken without basic necessities. The storm's passage was documented in John Atkin's A Voyage to Guinea, Brazil, and the West Indies, 1723, end quote. So, would a rational person take a bet that that one wasn't a Category 5? And now, we interrupt the program for a word from our sponsor, which, as always, is you. We haven't asked for a while. I don't like doing it. You don't like hearing it. But these videos don't make themselves. You know, we don't have big fancy budgets. We film here in my study or downstairs in my living room, and the only reason we can do it at all is because of contributions from people like you. So please, if you haven't already, make a pledge, one time or monthly, so we can get back to doing what we love best, which is this. As with the constant pronouncements that the coral is moribund, the constant predictions that the hurricanes are coming for us like Valkyrie must at some point undermine the credibility of those making them, not just on this one subject, but on climate far more broadly. Oh, by the way, an alert reader with a background in the energy industry comments regarding our sarcasm about the Canadian federal government spending per EV charging station that it's actually not out of line with private industry figures. So he said, quote, if the government got it done for about $100,000 per plug, then they actually got reasonable value for the money, end quote. But as he then adds, quote, all of which makes one wonder about the economics of installing them in the first place, end quote. Indeed. Though presumably you wonder less if you're spending other people's money. And another thing. At time of writing the newsletter, Canada's carbon carny had just gotten back from hobnobbing with his fellow wizards in Sharm el-Sheikh, having just returned from doing so in Washington, having just returned from doing so in London, having just returned from doing so in New York, having just returned from doing so in Mexico, and so on. And then, with a crucial budget looming, his massive, wonderful housing plan stalled by not having existed, and so forth, he was hard at flight, zipping off to Malaysia, Singapore, and the Republic of Korea for 9 grueling days of eating canapes, uttering cliches, and generally saving us from long words with windy Davos Mayan platitudes. But won't somebody at some point lean over and say, excuse me, sir, isn't CO2 bad according to that jet-setting green wizard Carney chap? Ah, and we also note yet another EV fire, this time in New Zealand, following a collision between a car and a bus. This one, regrettably, was fatal. Witnesses evidently couldn't save the bus driver due to the intensity of the flames. Remember when the left was obsessed with safety? It seems so recent, as, for instance, on COVID. Oh, and Scientific American weighs in on the recent study, which we mentioned just 2 weeks ago, saying that the Earth has mysteriously become less reflective in the 21st century, thus absorbing more heat for reasons unconnected to CO2. Except they say, of course, it means runaway heating thingy, because, quote, if more solar radiation is coming in, the northern hemisphere will continue to get hotter. This could mean that more ice and snow will melt, further fueling the global heating and darkening, end quote. What a stupid planet. Then there was the Atlantic Weekly Planet screeching that, quote, Trump's trade war could turbocharge deforestation in the Amazon, end quote. Boo, Trump. But just wait until they find out that organizers of the COP30 Gabfest hacked down vast stretches of that very same rainforest to make room for a new 4-lane highway to speed passage for an estimated 50,000 attendees. Let's see them blame that one on Trump. Oh, wait. They just did. In the newsletter, we also note Reuters' Sustainable Switch, technically the product of a news organization, emailing about, quote, the long-term consequences of natural disasters, as we look at how people in Spain, Mexico, and the United States are recovering from extreme weather events as they grapple with mental health constraints, body recovery, and rebuilding. Weather-related natural disasters, many exacerbated by climate change, are on the rise, according to the United Nations, end quote. And yes, the United Nations says a lot of strange stuff. But surely, as reporters, you checked about this fabled increase in natural disasters. Because if not, we're going to be skeptical about the part where weather is making people crazier, too. Except those hallucinating increases in storms and so forth. We are persuaded on that one. Now, as you know, there is nothing climate change cannot do, except possibly prompt journalists to do fact checks. Certainly our Have It Both Ways series has shown, and is showing, that it can make places and things wetter and drier at once, saltier and fresher, bigger and smaller, nearer and farther, and of course, it can make it colder as well as warmer. But it can also reach in and fiddle in the minutest ways. Not a sparrow falls, but some zealot blames climate. No, really, it's endless fun to Google anything you can think of and immediately get, say, quote, sparrow's storm stress a harbinger of climate change impact, end quote. But how about, quote, South Korea's fishermen keep dying? Is climate change to blame, end quote? Yep, you bet it is. If you ignore everything else, including the evidence that this notoriously dangerous profession is dangerous. If journalists had any kind of real education, the first question they would ask themselves is whether ocean fishing has traditionally been safe, but now something has gone wrong. And then they would recall some history professor telling them of the Hanseatic League and the once famous motto inscribed over the old shipping house in Bremen in the once studied Latin, Navigare necesse est, bibere non est necesse, which means seafaring is necessary, living is not necessary. Or they'd remember some English professor making them read The Tempest or Typhoon or Moby Dick. It's about this whale. Or a book at all, come to think of it. Instead, they buy a 75% jump in fatalities in a single year as the work of climate change, a phenomenon that allegedly operates over decades. And pay no attention at all to, oh, say, quote, the country's aging fishing workforce, a growing reliance on migrant workers, and poor safety training, end quote. Mind you, apparently safety standards in that industry are so bad that inspectors put on boats to check on implementation have a mysterious tendency to vanish over the railing. Must be the unprecedented big waves, right? Now, speaking of our Have It Both Ways series, we reported last month on a new study out of the Netherlands showing that there's no evidence for an acceleration in sea levels when examining tide gauge data corrected for land level shifts. And we actually received a nice note from one of the study authors, who thanked us for our accurate summary of the research, which inspired us to do an episode of the Have It Both Ways series to sea level rise, specifically this acceleration issue. The average rate of sea level rise is low enough that most places around the world have no cause to panic, posing a challenge for alarmists who responded by saying, ah, but it's accelerating, particularly in a 2005 study that claimed to have and show the receipts. But not to worry, this being climate science, now you see it, and now you don't. The 2005 paper was the usual wacky mix of computer model data, cherry-picked starting points, and even invented data to extend the record back to 1870. But, sadly, a 2011 study looking at U.S. coastal data from the very same sea level archive concluded that instead of acceleration, the data show deceleration. No! But when they tried to salvage the situation by looking outside the U.S., sea level rise was decelerating, not accelerating, at the global scale. Blast those oceans! Have they been talking to the ice? Oh, and speaking of ice, and hat tip to no trick zone, we present a new study explaining the lack of Arctic sea ice melting since 2012. Back when the ice was melting, over the 2000 to 2012 period, we saw a parade of climate experts extrapolating forward and announcing that we were roasting the Arctic and summers there would soon be ice-free and we were all going to die, starting with the polar bears. It was simple science, you see, and settled. Except the trend promptly changed direction, and last spring they admitted to being surprised by it. But what with that settled science and omniscient models and all that there, they now claim that they knew it was going to happen and that they know what will happen next. Maybe. Someday. Unless it doesn't. And then pancakes. Because from the CO2science.org archive, Phagopyrum esculentum, or common buckwheat, is a knotweed, though neither a weed, nor wheat, nor even a cereal, or any kind of a knot. But buck up, because it is, like other plants, a fan of CO2. In 2007, there were three experiments showing that an extra 300 parts per million of CO2 in the air improved buckwheat growth by an average of 17.3%. So fire up the griddle and make yourself a stack, because there will be lots of buckwheat in the years ahead. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and one day I'll figure out what the heck that tilde does in Portuguese. That's right.